Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld with Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is Charles Lunsford, author of Running with George, a really fun book that I have had a great time reading. I love the first sentence of books, as my listeners know. So I am just going to read you the first sentence and we'll get going. September. I was just bending over to tie the laces on my running shoes when I heard a sound behind me. I looked up and saw the finest ass and legs I've ever seen in a spare pair of spandex shorts run past me. How long did it take you to write that sentence, Charles?
Well, one of the things that I was always taught is that the first sentence of the book should catch people's attention.
Got it.
Exactly right.
So you knew your audience, and you did it. Great job. Great job. Okay, Charles, we'll go back. We'll start with this. How did you get into writing? Give me the story.
It was just one of those things. I had been I've been a hairdresser for over 30 years. Mm-hmm. And part of being a hairdresser is being a really good listener.
Mm-hmm.
So people tell me their life story all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just would, like, come home and I'd write down little snippets of, like, what people had said to me. Or I keep a notebook with me.
Mm.
And I just, like, take down little notes. So, you know, be prepared. Something you may say tonight may end up in my next novel.
Oh, no. Okay, I've never been that immortalized. Great. So, I ask this of all my GLPD authors that, of course, are writing about people about the same age who are also of the same sexual orientation. So I have to ask, how much of this book is autobiographical?
Quite a bit.
Uh-huh. Which one are you?
That's for you to figure out.
Oh, okay. That's true. Yeah, you're right. It could be. Okay, we'll start thinking. Okay, your book is really, I'm putting it at a bromance novel. How about that? I'm coining a new term that you probably don't even know. I should change the keyword that I have to find this book. I'm going to change that tonight. I'm writing a note, romance novel. So many gay men don't have that experience, especially in, I want to say 49 is not late adult life, but let's say mature adult life. I really don't know too many gay men that have straight romance friends. Can you talk about that?
Well, here's the thing. I think that everybody would love to have a friend like George in
uh-huh.
their life.
Sure.
And George is Chester's guardian angel,
mm-hmm.
for a lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
He's there when Chester needs him the most,
mm-hmm.
and that he becomes his family.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
It's something that I think is, especially down here in South Florida, we have a tendency to move away from our
mm-hmm.
families,
mm-hmm.
and we create our own family.
Right,
the people
right.
that are not of our blood,
right.
but that we love and respect and treat just like our family.
Mm-hmm.
We
oh,
tell
yeah.
them everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We let them into our lives. They eat dinner with us. They have the holidays with us.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
I see that happen a lot down here. You know, people
yeah.
come together out of
mm-hmm.
out of need or want, or just out of the lack of being lonely.
But don't you think that's part of the gay community in general, though, that we do a lot of people do move away from their families, not just South Florida?
Yes.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, it's funny because now that you mentioned it, my partner and I were having a discussion the other day. We both are transplants. I'm 13 years here in South Florida. He's about 10. And we both were reading the newspaper the other day, and I looked at him and I said, you know, when I lived back in, I'm from Kansas City, I lived there for 30 years, even though I was out and I was, had friends, I read the obituaries. because that's where I had lived for 30 years. But here, I haven't read, I don't read the obituaries. I don't know anybody here, if they die or not. I mean, it's it, and our, of course, our local gay press doesn't print them. So you don't really get even that kind of a community. So you really have to make all of your community, all your, yourself. It's a job. And that's what I think you just touched on, that you make your family, you choose your family. So let's get into our little body image things we're going to talk about tonight and some other things. Gay men and body image. Chester, or Chick, in the book, has kind of let himself go. He looks in the mirror. He says, "Eh, I got to get out there and start running." This is something for the listeners out there that live in places where you have to wear a lot of clothes every day. Living in South Florida is a little tough on us 40-plus boys and girls, in that a lot of guys don't wear a lot of clothes, and they look damn good, making us look damn bad. And there's this whole body image thing that I struggle with, even though I've had a partner and I think I look okay. But let's talk about that, because that's how this whole thing got started. The whole book got started with wanting to get out there and run, right?
Right. You know what? It's not so much the body image as it is just to be healthy.
Uh-huh.
You know, here, because Chester is, what does he do? He's a massage therapist, and he goes to see bodies all the time, whether they're old or young or men or women or everything in between.
Uh-huh.
He sees them, and he sees the glory of the human body. But for him, because remember, he's now coming out of a 2-year black hole.
Uh-huh.
He has been in the depths of despair. He needs to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to start with the physical aspect of himself to get better. And what easier way than, especially when you live here in South Florida, is to simply put on a pair of shorts, put on a pair of shoes, and go out running.
That's right.
And on his first day, he hits a home run.
I know.
He's like this really hot guy, right, who
right.
happens to become his guardian angel.
Right, who doesn't beat him up or call the police. So, I mean, it's
exactly.
great. Well, you had to meet him soon enough because, you only have so many time. You only have so much time in a book to hook somebody. So, he did hit a home run, of course. And the book is about finding love from a depth. And it is a – I'm not giving any more of the plot away to anybody, but the book Running with George, available at Amazon.com, written by Charles Lunsford, LUNSFORD, if you're listening without a pencil, is available on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and we just found a new place that it was listed called KoboBooks.com, KoboBooks.com, and they just have the e-version there. I also want to do another plug right here. Charles is going to be in person at the Stonewall National Museum and Archives, formerly known as the Stonewall Library and Archives, at 1300 East Sunrise Boulevard here in Fort Lauderdale on Tuesday, June the 11th at 7 p.m. The event is free and open to the public and is sponsored by the Broward County Cultural Commission. So there, I did all my talking.
Yeah, everybody show up.
All right, I'm going to bake brownies. So anyway, I'm going to...
Are everybody bring your running shorts and tank tops, and let's go for a run afterwards.
Right. Well, yes, the Stonewall Library and Archives, which changed its name because it got bigger since I left the helm, is in Holiday Park. So it's right in Holiday Park, so we can do a little run around Holiday Park. And
it's
hopefully by then it'll be the rains will have stopped. It's awful. It's awful.
Well,
okay.
if not, then we'll go for a cocktail.
That's right. There's always that. We're just near world. Okay. So I spoke with Charles a little bit about this, so he has a mental prep on this. You're sitting there next Tuesday, and this young, very shy young man with his journal in his hand comes up to you afterwards and says, "Mr. Lunsford, my name is Joe Blow, and I want to be a writer just like you. How do I do it?"
Oh, boy. How do you do it? Just
because you know what? It's going to happen. I already know
that. It's going to happen. I'm going to tell you something, Nate. This is what happened with me.
Okay.
I had been in a relationship for a long time.
Right.
And my relationship was starting to come to an end.
Uh-huh.
And I was starting to write out of just cleansing my soul.
Wow.
And there were times that I would come out of the office, and I had been there for 8 hours, and it was, I didn't know it. Like, I would look up, and it would be dark outside.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wrote brought me to tears. There's still mm-hmm. parts of my book that I cannot read aloud
mm-hmm.
because it's still raw,
mm-hmm.
and right. it's very emotional for
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What I would say to somebody who wants to write is to simply be true. I know it's Shakespeare said it, to thine own self be true, but it's
mm-hmm.
it's very much alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you're telling a story, mm-hmm. whether it's fiction, whether it's your life story, be true. Be as honest as you can with it, and people will believe it. People will fall right in line with it.
Mm-hmm. And your story is
am I making myself, does it make sense to you?
Yeah, it does.
What I'm
it does.
Saying?
You're just saying, cut the veins open and let it bleed, right? let it come
yeah,
out.
Yeah, and you know what? Because let it bleed, because what will happen is if you're lucky enough like me and you find a publisher,
mm-hmm.
they'll reel you in.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, right.
The good thing about my book is they did not change one word.
Oh, you're kidding.
Of what I sent them. They may have taken out maybe a dozen sentences. That's all.
Really? Oh, my goodness. You're very fortunate. You're very fortunate.
I'm very fortunate indeed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, it also could be a sign that you wrote it very tight, that you really kept it a tight writing. You didn't use a lot. You read it more than once. You read it over more than once. You didn't write it once.
Oh, yeah. When I sent them the manuscript, I wanted
uh-huh.
to make sure that it was as polished as I
right.
possibly could do it.
Right, right. That's a very, very high compliment that it wasn't changed. They didn't tell you to rewrite it altogether. Didn't change the title.
No.
Great. And other things. Yeah, Regal Crest is the publisher. They also do Bella Books and Rainbow Books. A lot of my listeners are very familiar with Bella Books because we have a lot of women, very, very well-known women who've written for Bella Books over the years, and my association with the Stonewall National Museum and Archives, Bella Books actually has their every other year they bring a bunch of authors together to the Stonewall for a weekend, and they do their little show, the little dog and pony show in our library, which we have a lot of fun with. And I get in trouble every time I say dog and pony show, and I'm the only one there with a penis. It's kind of funny that I know. I'm not sure. I don't check anybody else's. So, but Bella's a fun place. Rainbows, it's done stuff. Regal Crest, I'm not as familiar with, but I think it's the same. I think what they're doing is they're just shuffling their thing. Your book really is not a erotic novel.
No.
So it doesn't fit
even
in.
Though this is funny because even though the reviews that I've got on Amazon,
uh-huh.
you would think that I've written a gay version of 50 Shades of Grey.
Of Grey, I saw that and I read that and then I said, did somebody tear some pages out of my book? Because no, it is very okay. I'll tell you what, it's sensual. It's not as graphic. Right, it's very sensual. There's you talk about smells, you talk about sounds, you talk about feelings, you talk, you know, so in that right. case you are a lesbian.
you found me out.
I did.
My lesbianism comes through.
Right. This is not a night.
But I wanted it to be honest
uh-huh.
and I wanted it to be provocative.
Right.
But I also wanted it to be human. And
right.
one of the things is, especially in the gay community, and, you know, I want to, like, you know, dispel this myth that once you become 50 years old, you're an old man.
Right.
No
oh, agree.
Way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think
oh,
I think I'm more passionate at 50
right.
than I was at 35, to be honest with you.
Oh, I agree. I'm 60. I'm going to be 63. Yeah. And I met my partner, my present partner, which is I didn't know it, but it's the magic love of my life. I didn't meet him till I was 52, and I wasn't ready for that kind of relationship. I really wasn't. I was too involved in myself, too involved in my career. You know, there were so many other things going on that really weren't that got in the way. I mean, at 35, I was a mess. Jesus, I don't want to talk about it. So, but you know, the gay community, we're our own worst enemy when we describe ourselves, and whether it's our physical selves, whether it's our dating selves, whether it's our ageism, which is what I loved about the novel, is that the guy was 49, because there's actually a dearth of these happy ending romance novels with adults. You know, there all seem to be these high school kids, college kids, the young adults after Dan Savage's It Gets Better campaign, there was an explosion of young adult gay novels, and it's still exploding right now. And so I was very happy to have this cross my desk, because it was just a fun, as I said, it's a fun read. It's summertime, so it's a great beach read, you know, because
it's super. You're absolutely right. People, I'm telling you, if you go and, you know, grab the book and go by the pool,
right,
it's perfect. And you can lay it down, because each month is a different chapter, and it's almost like 12 short stories all put together.
Right. I didn't mention that.
So you put it down, and you pick it back up.
Right. I'm one of those that I read it all at once. I have to sit down and I have to read the entire book at once. If it's 4 o'clock in the morning, big deal. I just saw the sunrise. So, but that's me. But you're right. I forgot to mention that the book is in nice chapters. It's in my month. And is that how you measure your life, in months, weeks? Is that the way you do it in real life? Is that how you feel?
No. And it just seemed to me that that's how the book told the story. And I could tell my little short stories, and that each month was going to build up to Chester becoming a whole person again.
Hmm.
And that's what happens, you know. And again, I'm not going to do any spoiler alert.
Okay, I'm trying not to.
We know that he's going to make himself better.
Uh-huh.
At the end of the book. And
well, I told everyone it had a happy ending.
Yeah.
I already told him it had a happy ending.
And you know what? I mean, even mature people can be afraid and, you know, not trust themselves. And then, you know what? Sometimes you just have to take a leap of faith and know that people around you want to help you.
Right, right. And that is, you have to open yourself up. And Chick does that, though he does feel, you know, you can tell there's a growth. There's a definite path he's on, but he's very clumsy at the beginning, clumsy in his words, more clumsy in his relationships. My God, did I really say that? He says that a few times. He catches himself. And then by the end of the book, he's much smoother. I don't know.
Right.
And
again, it also repeats itself, too. It's what happens when Chester and Ed, 20 years before, are first dating, is exactly what's said at the end. So as life repeats itself over and over again.
You got that right. Well, I think you even mentioned, and it was funny because as I was reading it, I was kind of seeing in my head the Bill Murray movie Groundhog Day. And so you do mention that in the book, that that's what you know, Chester's life was like that after his first relationship had, when he went down into the dumps, and you're coming out of the dumps, you do have that where you just do that repetitive day after day after day, until something hits you. But some people don't, and we all know people who aren't as fortunate as Chester and George, because I think George got something out of this too. I mean, besides the obvious.
And you know what? And the other thing is too is, like, how many of your friends do you associate with that are not gay, but that love you and your gay friends, that can talk about what's going on, and you know, and they may be married and they may have children, their children refer to you and your partner as maybe,
as uncle.
If you're lucky enough, like I am, they refer to you as uncle.
Correct.
You know,
yeah.
This is uncle, and you know, and,
right.
and my partner,
oh, yeah.
too, the same thing. They refer to us. I have
right.
my godson. He's
right.
8 years old.
Nice.
And when my partner's car was in the driveway at the house, there's mm-hmm. oh, look, you know, there's that's Uncle Chip's partner.
Right, right. Oh, I know.
And
I know. Yeah.
And it's very sweet. And it's very
yeah.
matter of fact. So
of
kids
course.
Today are being raised with this acceptance. It's or not even
of
acceptance.
It's just
like
it's just
yeah. common.
It's the wallpaper. I call it wallpaper. It's the new wallpaper. Yeah. I mean, my partner Grover and I each were married to women. We're about a decade older than you, and so we had a little different lives, and we met later on in life. But our children know each other. Our children have children, and everybody knows who everybody is. And it, as I said, it's just kind of like the wallpaper. People are divorced. People are remarried. There's this uncle, there's this, you know, grandma's got a boyfriend, you know, there's Poppy and Gramps on this side. So it's not, and you think, oh my God, how are the kids going to know who is this person? They don't care. They know love. They just know love and they feel love. And you're right. If you're fortunate enough, unfortunately, Charles, I don't think that many gay people have that rich life. I really don't. I really feel I see that more down here than I did when I lived in the Midwest. But I do see a lot of lonely people down here who are afraid to reach out to the straight people. I think so. That's my personal opinion. I'm personal, but I live in the ghetto. I live in the gay ghetto, so you know it's a little different. So, but I do see a lot of lonely people.
You know, when I was, you know, I just moved from Surfside.
Uh huh. All right.
I was right smack dab in suburbia.
Right. Oh sure. Yeah. No, you can tell.
So now I live in like hip Hollywood, and you know everybody's
yeah.
you know everybody's
right.
friendly. Oh, you know, there's another gay couple up the street, and there's a gay couple around the
right.
corner, and
right.
You know,
oh yeah. Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, it's completely different. Yeah, and as I said, I lived I lived in Wilton Manors, and now I live in like a little gay enclave on the beach. And, you know, it's like I tell people the name of the building, and they say, oh, that's the gay one. And I'm going, oh, my God, I did it again. So, I mean, but you know, but I do have straight friends that in that, you know, I actually had to go look for them. But I do think that what you're writing about, I think a lot of gay men are going to look at that and say, I wish I had that. I really do. I don't think it's as common as you think it is. I hope that you're more right than I am. I hope so, but
you know what? Here's the thing. This is what I believe. If
uh-huh.
you want it, all you have to do, I mean, this is, and I'm not going all Dorothy.
Okay.
It's not to click your heels together,
uh-huh.
but to actually sort of tell the universe what you want. But you know,
right.
the universe is kind of a funny, like a, you know, she's a fickle woman.
Right.
And if you're not precise on your words, I mean, they
right.
give you what you want.
Right.
So make sure you know exactly what you're asking for.
Right. Right. You remind me of a Margaret Cho joke. Can I tell it now?
Yeah.
Okay. Margaret Cho tells this joke where she says, you know, I'm around all these gay men, but you know, when I was younger, I wished and wished to my fairy god princess that I'd be surrounded by gorgeous men. I should have been more specific.
It's so true.
It is so true.
You know, it worked for me. It
yeah.
really did. It,
right.
I wanted so badly
uh-huh.
to, well, first of all, I write.
Right.
And I thought that that's what a writer did. A writer
right.
writes.
Right.
But my partner reminded me that a writer writes to be read.
Uh-huh.
Is it like one of those things about like the tree falling in the forest?
Right.
You know,
right.
Does a book really exist if nobody reads it?
Correct. That's true. That is very true.
He's absolutely right. Is
uh-huh.
that writers write to be read.
Well, that's right. No, you're exactly right. And you also need to write what you know, but you also have to expand your experience. I mean, you have to travel, you have to read, you have to, you know, go out and meet people and do things and be something, something other than a writer. You know, you have
Mark Twain says that fiction is a little truth and a lot of lie.
Yeah. Well, I've never heard that one. I love that. Okay, I'm going to get back to a question from the little people. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know in the chat room. They're little people because it's a little box on my screen. They're not little people. I'm just joking. Anyway, wanted to know, how did you get your book published? Somebody wants to know.
Well, you know what happened is that there's all these small publishing companies all over the United States.
Uh-huh.
And that I'm going to kind of go backward a little bit, and then I'm going to tell you exactly what I'm
sure. Going to do. Okay.
Is
okay,
that
good.
One of the classes that I take is the professor said, find your audience.
Right.
And write for your audience.
Uh-huh.
That was the best advice I ever got. That and to have a voice, you know, to make sure that what you're saying is you.
Okay.
So once I decided that I was going to write for gay readers and for gay sensitive readers as well.
Right. Uh-huh.
I then started looking through the internet for like-minded publishers.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And they have submission columns. And each one wants something different. Some want the first 30 pages. Some want the whole manuscript.
Wow.
And they also want what they call a query letter, which basically tells them about you as well as your writing and what the book is about. And you send these little packages into their submission desk most of the time via email.
Okay.
I've never had to send the manuscript through the postal service. Everything was done electronically.
Amazing.
And nowadays, I only got one rejection letter.
You're kidding.
The rest
of
them just don't contact you.
Oh, okay.
If they don't want you, they just don't contact you.
They ignore you.
And then you have to go and be the bug in their ear to find out, you know.
What happened.
And if you're lucky enough, they'll tell you why.
Really?
And that's good. That's for me. Because I'm one of those people that I have to learn from my mistakes.
Right.
Like, why didn't you find my book appealing? Or why wasn't it something that you would, why your company would not want you to publish? Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to a girl. She's 22 years old. She's not married. She doesn't have a family. What would she know about a mature gay guy who lost his partner trying to find love again?
Mm-hmm.
What would she know about that in 30 pages?
No, you're right. So you have to really, and some of it's just dumb luck. You know, sometimes you just hit the editor or the publisher or the reader or on the right day. You know, they feel,
But you know what happens is a lot of them, like the publisher herself or the publisher themselves, they don't ever read the book until almost the very end.
Right, exactly.
They have this
readers
group,
uh-huh.
like sort of like a test group,
right.
that they throw the manuscript at,
right.
and if they like it, then they pass it on to somebody else,
right.
and then it goes right to the editor.
No, I know. I'm part of that for a publishing company, actually. So, I know we have 90 seconds left on the fastest 30 minutes of your life. Started this. No, there's only 90 seconds left. So I want you to leave our listeners with Charles Lunsford's next book. What's your new project?
It's called Angel.
Angel.
Angel is about an angel that falls to earth and is becoming human.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
That's as far as I'm going to say.
Oh, we're not getting any more? Oh, my goodness.
It's going to fall under the category of science fiction, but it is so not science fiction, and it's not preachy or anything. It's another, like, self-discovery, at an older age.
Okay.
So it's like having to see things for the first time with mature eyes. How's that?
Okay, that's fine. Well, see, I expected to have Dale and Chester adopting Chinese children in
No. That's
running with
told.
Oh, darn. You know, I love sequels. Okay, great. Listen, 13 seconds left. I am going to say goodnight. Thank you. See you all at the library next Tuesday, June 11th, 7 p.m. Good night, Charles. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Good night.
Good night. Take care. All righty.